This is the Hervoy Moritz Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All righty then, quick news before we get to our guest. It's been reported that in Australia, where a lot of our listeners are situated, that construction workers are having regular mental breakdowns and crying to colleagues and family members as 80% of building firms hemorrhage money. So the housing construction industry is having problems. It says more than half of the estimated 12,000 construction companies in the country are reportedly trading at a loss, with many on the brink of collapse. So I don't know what's going on there, but I think all around the world we're having overheated, another housing bubble potentially. But I know new people who lived in Australia, and the price for a middle-class home, I hear, is insane. Like something like $1 million for a middle-class home in Australia, which here in Mexico is like 100 grand, you know, in the US, anywhere from 100 to 200 to 300 grand. So, but I guess you get paid more in Australia. We've got The Guardian going at it again. There was a piece where The Guardian's talking about transhumanism, a movement that aims to address or end the tragedies of reality, aging, sickness, and involuntary death. And so they don't leave us alone with their metaverse transhuman project that's going on. And the UK is set for recession and pound test of historic lows. I like how they tried to blame Brexit. I don't think it really has anything to do with Brexit, but 6 years after Britain decided to leave the EU, the fascist EU, market participants see a country in crisis. The UK is stumbling toward recession as inflation spirals, while the pound is on course to retest historic lows. No one is doing good anywhere, whether it's Sri Lanka, Britain, Germany. Things are bad, as that I forget his name, the main character in the great film The Network would say. It's being reported today Russian forces capture several more settlements in Luhansk region. Not really surprising if you've been following along with what's really going on. It seems like the Russians aren't doing so bad as the Western press likes to make us think. And in my home state of Illinois, with these crazy Pritzkers, Governor Pritzker, the billionaire family pushing synthetic sex identities, the wealthy, powerful, and sometimes very weird Pritzker cousins have set their sights on the new godlike goal, using gender ideology to remake human biology, writes tabletmag.com, which is a pretty good outlet as well. So yeah, the fun never ends. There's an interesting piece from New York Times today discussing China's surveillance state and how it's growing. They did an analysis of over 100,000 government bidding documents and found that China's ambition to collect digital and biological data from its citizens is more expansive and invasive than previously known. It's a 15-minute short clip, but they're rolling this out globally. So yeah, this is a global surveillance state that we need to fight back against. And we've got CoinDesk talking about this latest report from the Bank for International Settlements, and they say that crypto's structural flaws make it an unsuitable basis for a monetary system, according to the BIS. Instead, monetary systems could be built around central bank digital currencies, which are digital representations of central bank money. They say there's room for only some of crypto's underlying technical features like programmability and tokenization, not for cryptocurrencies themselves. Something I've been believing from the get-go, that Bitcoin was basically a bridge to this central bank digital currency cashless society and algorithm ghetto, where if when this is established, we are completely screwed, as Harrison Ford would say in Indiana Jones, because if you commit a thought crime, you're turned off. You are in the algorithm ghetto, as we keep seeing every single week happening to people. And finally, I just comment on CJ Hopkins' latest piece. He's out in Germany. I've interviewed him a number of times, and I like what he writes. He says, Germany is not dispensing with the semblance of democracy. No, the German constitution will remain in effect. It's just that the revised Infection Protection Act, like the Enabling Act of 1933, which granted the Nazi government the authority to issue any edicts it wanted under the guise of remedying the distress of the people, will grant the new normal German government the authority to continue to supersede the constitution and issue whatever edicts it wants under the guise of protecting the public health, for example, forcing the German masses to display their conformity to the new official ideology by wearing medical-looking masks on their faces for 6 or 7 months of every year. So they want to make a law where Germans will be forced to wear from October to Easter masks. This is total insanity, and this is TNT Radio.
Gaining perspectives.
It's well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it's the Hirvoy Moritz Show, sending transmission live from Mexico, narco territory, AMLOville. TNTradio.live is the website. You can download the smartphone app and listen live on Rumble, Pentagon Tube, or Odyssey, and stream and download the MP3s after the fact. I'm hungry just by saying his name. Craig Pasta Jardula is co-host of AM Wake Up and the Convo Couch, an independent talk show discussing and analyzing the daily news cycles and introducing new grassroots personalities. You can find them at theconvocouch.com. That's convo as in C-O-N-V-O, couch.com. And on Twitter at YoPasta. What's up, Pasta?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on. Can you hear me?
Yes, all is well. Thanks for taking the time. And I like the work you do at Convo Couch. I had on your partner, Fiorella Isabella, on TNT some time ago. And we've interviewed some of the same great people. And, you know, perhaps for listeners, if you could tell us a bit about Pasta Jardula, the work you've been doing, and lately, you know, sort of the line of research you've been most passionate and pissed off about.
I know they go hand in hand, passionate and pissed off. Well, you know, I started the Convo Couch with Fiorella about 5 months ago. I was in the almost 5 years ago. AM Wake Up was started a little bit under 5 months ago. We're pretty new at that one. But the Convo Couch, you know, Fiorella, I met her in the restaurant business, and we were both burners of sorts, you know, activists of sorts, kind of in the field doing whatever. We were pissed off and a little bit passionate about the fact that, you know, grassroots candidates weren't getting a chance to express their opinions and whatnot and get interviews whatsoever. They were completely shut out from the mainstream media. Plus, we also thought that a bunch of our progressive brothers and sisters were lacking in foreign policy. So we thought, hey, why don't we give it a shot? Why don't we start a little duo kind of thing where we can have a type of just platform where we sit there and talk about the, you know, upcoming events of whatnot, you know, in social situations. And we were also active in the field, getting out to rallies and whatnot. So, yeah, now it's 5 years running, and Fiorella has just taken a part-time job, well, I should say a job, because now she's going to do double job for RT, and she just arrived in Moscow 2 days later. And I started a morning show with my good friend Steve Poikonen from Slow Newsday, and that's what we're doing. We're just cranking it now. The thing that we've matriculated to most has been elections, specifically elections in Latin America and all around. And we just got back from Colombia. And they just had an unprecedented election where they elected their first semi-leftist populist candidate and the first time in the history of Colombia. We were able to do what we do, go scrutinize and observe the whole election system as a whole. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, Steve of Slow News Day, I like his stuff. He was on my TNT show a couple of months back, so really good stuff. By the way, for some reason, I was going to theconvocouch.com today, and it's telling me access denied. Have you noticed some issues? Like, I can't access the website. I don't know if you're updating or something, or is that news to you?
Maybe they are updating. I'm going to it right now. If we don't have it anymore, I'd be surprised. Yeah, I guess we don't have it. That's weird. I'm gonna have to check upon that.
DHS has gone after you, and I saw. Yeah, you chatted recently with James Roguski. I talked to him yesterday, and I guess Fiorella has become a Russian agent. I'm just kidding. I was going to ask you about later about the election in Colombia, but since you mentioned it, let's talk about that. So Gustavo Petro, first leftist president. So, you know, if you could give us your view on how you see this and the implications.
Yeah, I mean, this is something big. This is something a lot of the people wanted. They're actually trying to move the needle incrementally in a way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's a little bit different here in the States. I think in the problem with the States, a lot of our establishment candidates that we got behind at one point, they shoot for incrementalism and they get nothing. Over in Latin America or Central America, they're shooting for the moon, but they're ending up with incrementalism and they're moving in the right direction. Any way you look at it, whether it was Hernandez who got elected or Gustavo Petro, we were going to have a new president, unlike the government beforehand, that was willing to actually do have trade relationships with Venezuela, at the very least, if not open up the doors even more. They're right next to each other. And this is something that in the States, when it comes to elections altogether, it's kind of a shame that we don't pay attention to it, since our elections here at home are so awful compared to the last four elections we saw in the global South, that being Nicaragua, Peru, Honduras, and now Colombia. But the fact is that, you know, Colombia is the only Latin American, South American NATO state. You know, they have special NATO status, and they're right next to another country in Venezuela that's very close and has a lot of ties with the Russian government as well. So influence in this whole region right now is up for grab. And I've been saying it for quite some time that once this stuff is over in the Ukraine, if it is ever over, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever be able to weed out this white vanilla ISIS kind of mentality that's set in stone over there. They're kind of dug in deep and getting armed by the state, the United States government. But once this eases up, I think you're going to see a lot of shift of America, the empire that is in the government, trying to go back to South and Central America to regain a foothold that they once had, because they're starting to lose it now.
Yeah, that was, I guess, one of my questions. I've got a contributor, Jose Nino, that writes for my Geopolitics and Empire podcast. And I guess the feeling is that U.S. is losing hegemony in Latin America. Is that your feeling? I mean, it does feel like that from Mexico pushing back in some regards and other countries. Do you feel them losing Latin America?
100%. 100%. The empire is stretched too thin. They've overplayed their hands. The ruling class has gotten out of control. They've too many bases, 1,000 bases spread out throughout the whole country. Eventually, it's going to kind of wear you down financially. And that's where we're at. They're trying to prop up this whole system as far as our banking system, you know, and whatnot. And you know, you're in Mexico right now. You know the pushback you're getting from AMLO. I mean, AMLO would not participate in the sanctions game. Just the other day, I saw Putin kind of mentioned that he's thinking of starting a new G8. And that G8 was Russia, China, India, Iran, Brazil, Mexico, Indonesia, and Turkey. I mean, that's interesting. And the fact that, you know, AMLO is right on his doorstep and he's pretty much telling, you know, the United States, I'm not going to play your silly games anymore. You have Xiomara Castro, who just won election, first female president in Honduras, the wife of Manuel Zelaya, who was ousted in a coup over 13 years ago, I believe it was. Pedro Castillo, who won in Peru. I mean, he beat Fujimori, who was a long-standing stronghold there, an oligarch of sorts in her own mind, in Peru. Ortega held on to power. And now you have Colombia. You have this big, big shift. Even the countries that are considered like strong allies, like if you say El Salvador, well, you know, Nayib Bukele, is pushing back against the IMF. They are losing total control of South and Central America. And I think the more you see these populist, semi-left-leaning, at least left when it comes to economics, candidates that are elected, the more you'll see them bond together and the more you'll see the United States start to sweat.
Yeah, you know, I'm a weird kind of conservative. I'll take AMLO over any Calderon or Peña Nieto any day. And I've been impressed with the ways he's been fighting for Mexican sovereignty against these transnationals trying to privatize and just rape Mexico, whether it's the energy sector or the agricultural sector or you name it. So, and I've talked to many average Mexicans here, working class Mexicans who as well would be conservative and not leftist. And they're like, you know what? He's the least worst president we've had since forever. And I think it's true. Like, people are realizing this beyond the left-right thing. But get your thoughts on the Colombia. Do you really feel... Someone posted an image which may not mean anything, and I think was from almost a decade ago, of Gustavo Petro driving a car with Bill Clinton. Do you feel Gustavo will be anti-establishment? I mean, we never know with these politicians where they'll end up as, you know, people try to get to them. But do you think there's a real chance for him to be an anti-establishment figure in Colombia?
First off, I want to point out that, too, that in the global south, that the people, like, for instance, in Nicaragua, and I made a statement today, and Fiorello said, Pasta, I think you're taking it too far. But I said the people of Nicaragua are, like, socially conservative. They're like Trumpers that speak Spanish. You know, they're not into gay marriage, not going to legalize marijuana. They don't like abortion. They can't understand the trans issue. So when we talk about leftists, we talk about economics. And a lot of that economics has to do with somewhat nationalizing certain resources so your country can really benefit off it, but more or less making sure that the empire doesn't go in there and take everything and then force their monetary system on you so that your people are just starving and left with nothing. I think when it comes to Gustavo Petro, that he's played the game before. He wasn't like the radical candidate they wanted. That was more the vice president. And Francia Marquez, she was the one that they were like all the radicals and the leftists, hardcore leftists really wanted. But I think Petro was the right choice. He was the stepping stone. First things first, let's shake a little bit of the empire off our shoulders. Let's get some of our resources and use them back home to feed and enrich our people. You know what I'm saying? And let's stop, you know, just being their little puppet of sorts. So I think he can play this game. It's going to be very hard for him, just the way it's very hard for Castillo within his own government in Peru, because he has so much pushback in his own Congress and the American empire over his shoulder. Petro is going to have faced the same things, but I think he will be anti-establishment enough for most people to set the table for the next person to come in. And then you'll see some real change, all depending on what happens in the region now with the United States losing their grip. I think they're going to freak out soon.
You know, people can say what they want about privatization and the free market and capitalism and socialism, but I really enjoy here in Mexico, because the Mexican government has public utilities like CFE, the electricity. I really enjoy paying only $5 a month for my electricity and $5 a month for my water. I mean, why would you want to give that up? Those are the most basic things for living. And I talk to people and I'm a triple citizen. I'm a Croatian, American, and Mexican. And in Croatia and America, they pay hundreds of dollars a month for water, hundreds of dollars a month for, you know, at least $100 for electricity. I'm like, I like my $5 electricity, $5 water. Any thoughts on Lula? He's been in the news more and more lately. Do you think he'll come back? There's any real chance of him making a comeback?
I think it's almost certain that he's going to come back and go after Bolsonaro as far as, you know, that election. That is the next election scheduled for the Convo Couch in the Global South, is to go to Brazil and witness that election. We got a lot of homework to do and a lot of work to do on the ground. But yes, I definitely do see him coming back. Now, here's the thing. A lot of people think that he's going to just win easily over Bolsonaro. I'm not so sure of that. I think it's going to be a tough battle the way it was in Colombia, where it was decided by less than 4 points. It was decided by 3 points. With just two candidates. That's a lot. That's not a lot. That's very close. So I think you're going to see the same thing in Brazil. Bolsonaro is definitely, lifted up his numbers, I think, with his pushback against the WHO and not willing to play the globalist game when it comes to the COVID. Even in fact, saying that if they were to impose those rules in the international health regulations, which they were trying to sneak in, giving sovereignty away to the WHO, Bolsonaro said he was going to walk. And that goes a long way. A lot of people like to see when you push back against the elites or the empire. So I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. However, I still give Lula a pretty good chance of winning.
Just real quick, if you have, do you have any thought, it was reported by Bloomberg just some days ago that Bolsonaro, apparently, when he met with Biden, I think it was, where was it, Summit Americas, I think, that he asked Biden for help. Again, I don't know if this is confirmed or not. It could be disinformation, but he asked Biden for help, apparently, in the re-election campaign against Lula. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think he asked for help. I think it's being twisted. I think he wanted conditions to meet with Biden. And I remember one of the conditions where he could not talk negatively about the election system that's taking place within Brazil. I don't know as far as the help is concerned. I think they're twisting that. I think he wanted some conditions before he met him. Oh, and by the way, you know, the press secretary, when asked about Bolsonaro, said that Juan Guaido is the president of Venezuela.
Yeah, I saw that. Man. I was mentioning that today. No, I saw the video where this was like 5 days ago or something, where they asked Nancy Pelosi about Juan Guaido, and it was so cartoonish. Like, she's like, she completely changed the subject. Like, it was so obvious. But I mean, total joke. I call it classic Pelosi. We're gonna have to take our first tequila break. Again, we've been talking to Craig Pasta Giardula of theconvocouch.com. You can find their work on, I think, Rockfin and YouTube and the podcast ecosystem, and find him on Twitter at Yo Pasta. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
Shannon Joy on TNT Radio.
This is why they fear her so much. Brooke Jackson, I know it was a long introduction, but I just wanted to lay the groundwork because I am so impressed by you and everything you do. Welcome to the Shannon Joy Show.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about the FDA. You mentioned that you were listening to this circus sideshow. It's really just a matter of crossing the T's, dotting the I's, and going through the motions, right? They want this shot into the arms of the babies. I will give you some good news, though. In New York State, recent as 4 to 6 weeks ago, they're saying this in the polling, how few parents have actually gone out and had their kids vaccinated. They make us think that everyone's doing it, but I think the reality is that more and more parents are very quietly refusing.
It does make me feel better, yes. I actually just read a poll recently that 73% of Americans have reservations about these shots.
Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swinging in reason.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice. It has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
What if you were wearing something sexy? What if you were drinking? What if you made the first move? No matter what, sexual assault is never your fault. Support is available 24/7 through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit rain.org. That's rainn.org. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, reminding you, it's never your fault.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind and some who haven't yet been cataloged. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back on the Hrvoje Moric show, TNT Radio. Live, we've been talking to Craig Pasta Jardula of theconvocouch.com. You can find him on Twitter at yopasta. Speaking of pasta, literally all weekend I was eating pasta. We had a birthday party for someone, we had catering, and it was lasagna and pasta, and then we ate the leftovers on Sunday. So all weekend I was eating pasta. I wanted to get your thoughts on the whole Great Reset thing, COVID-1984. I'm a semi-regular listener of the Convo Couch, and I've listened to some of the stuff you guys have talked about. I sense you've got a little bit of a different view on Great Reset, I think closer to my view. And this is the thing that preoccupies me the most these days, as I think most people will understand what's going on. And, you know, underneath the umbrella or the whole Great Reset, we've got, you know, the food shortages, cyber pandemic, digital ID, cashless society, technocracy, all this crazy stuff. What's your take on what's been going on the last 2 years and with the whole Great Reset?
Well, I definitely think the pandemic kind of shined a light on everything, you know. They were really sloppy on this whole situation. In fact, I think they were more sloppy on this situation than they were when trying to handle 9/11 at the aftermath. So many things that just got wrong and exposed themselves and left it out in the open. You know, the thing that I question most is it a break with the whole Putin mentality? That's the whole thing we've been having guests on, like Matt Arendt and Tom Luongo, talking about. Is there a split within the eugenicists of sorts, or the global elites, you know, whether it be, you know, Putin breaking away from the World Economic Forum? Where does Xi Jinping stand on the whole situation when it comes to China? Is America freaking out and the West freaking out because of what's going on, you know, with Russia deciding to say, hey, we're not going to play games anymore. We're going to take and we're going to put, commodities behind our currency, making it an actual currency rather than the bullshit that you have. There's a lot of things out there I question. And, you know, every single time I see crypto dip, I know you're not a big fan of Bitcoin, you believed it was a training method to get us all on this kind of blockchain, digital backed currencies from the banks that they want to get us on. You know, I'm still curious about that. Where does that stand? But I mean, every single time it does dip, I say, is this it? Is this the end? How long is it until communication breakdown? How long until it's over? How long until the oligarchs just dip out of this place and move their money and everything to, you know, Beijing and Moscow? Are they going to continue to try to put us all in the matrix? Are they going to let us kill each other first? I mean, there's so many questions I ask myself all the time, you know, and it happens on a daily basis. I'm like, when is the apocalypse happening? Is it zombie time now? So, I mean, yes, I do believe that there is a cabal of globalist elites that, you know, believe in, you know, depopulation. And yes, I believe they've been trying to put their plan out via the World Economic Forum. Yes, I believe everything that comes out of, you know, Klaus Schwab's mouth needs to be analyzed and looked upon and see what's going on. So I believe we're in it, you know what I'm saying? And every single time we have these guests, but today we had Dr. Paul Merrick and John Leake, who co-authored the book with Dr. McCullough, The Courage to Fight COVID-19. It seems like to give you more and more evidence that this is exactly what their plan. This is what they want to do. They want to depopulate us and put us into this one world government where they constantly track us at all single times in a massive security state.
Yeah, I mean, I was just in the previous hour talking with Charles Coves out in Australia. Like, so many people left and right are coming finally to the same conclusions that there's this global transnational financial elite globalists that are wanting to concentrate power at the global level. And I actually saw that, or at least a part of that interview that you and Fiorella did with Matt. Matt Arendt's been he's a frequent guest of mine on Geopolitics and Empire and on TNT Radio. So I respect him. I don't always agree on everything with him. But this is also my burning question. It's like this nugget, this paradox, you know, this enigma you're trying to figure out. Like, are Putin and Xi, is the East on board with this thing? And you find evidence at times that they are, and then evidence that they aren't. I think I was one of the earlier people to interview Riley Wagaman, formerly of RT and Press TV, out in Moscow. Actually, I might be talking to him again this week, but he's been on his Edward Slav Squad Substack. You should probably interview him if you haven't, but he's been detailing how in Russia they've been applying COVID-1984 like crazy. You know, they've been pushing the vax, the QR codes, the digital passports. You got Sberbank, which works with some of these, although they've been cut off, I think, from SWIFT, or they've been facing some of these issues. But on one hand, you do see the Russian government internally applying a lot of COVID-1984. But then externally, in foreign policy terms, you see this apparent, with Ukraine, this like the West wants to destroy and dismember Russia. They have for the past three centuries. But at the same time, one of the consequences of the Ukraine war is pushing forward the Great Reset. Like in Europe, I've interviewed Thierry Meyssan of Voltaire Network and Guy Maton, the Swiss intellectual, who both have said the purpose of Ukraine war is to destroy, impoverish Europe. And that's the goal of the Great Reset. Wipe out the middle class so you only have the oligarchy and the poor, like the Middle Ages. So, any further thoughts along these lines?
Well, you know, it looks like we better be careful, because if the ruble keeps going up, that they're going to create another, a bigger middle class in Russia. Who knows? I mean, these things all come into play. And yes, I question it. But, the other flip side of the coin, when it does come to Ukraine, right? What about these biolabs that were all connected and funded by the United States? I mean, the Pentagon just released a statement that all these biolabs that they were accused when they initially said, oh, there's no biolabs. And then they said like a week later, oh, there's biolabs, but they're research facilities. And if anything bad happens, it's the Russians. And then they said, oh, about a couple months later, okay, we funded these biolabs. You know, it just keeps changing. So what if Putin was left with no choice but to go and take these things out? You know what I'm saying? I suspect that there are biolabs in Taiwan. I've heard this kind of rhetoric. So really, I don't know what to think. And when it does come to the COVID-19 situation, right? And I've heard the same scuttlebutt or rhetoric or rumors or news, whatever you want to call it, about that COVID-1984. But what if everybody's just getting shut up with placebos? I mean, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. And that is a big question. And I constantly ask, like, well, why did he go along with the COVID shots? And they don't even have like a VAERS system over there. So, I mean, we don't even have accurate numbers of anything or what's going on behind the Iron Bear's curtain, wherever you want to call it. So, I mean, yeah, I'm just on standby. I'm watching. I'm listening. I don't know exactly what to think. But those are questions that we have to constantly ask. Why did Putin go along with the 1984 COVID protocols? And, but why does it look so different on the foreign policy aspect? You know, I don't know. I mean, these are questions.
Yeah, and I think it's healthy, as you said, and I do the same. I'm still on the fence. I feel the jury's out. There are people that put their foot down one way or the other. You know, I talk to the Matt Eretz of the world. I talk to the Riley Wagamans of the world, and I don't know. I'm not going to say I believe this when I don't know. I feel the jury's still out. We don't know what's going on. We're in the fog of war. As well, some of the predictions of the independent and alternative media over the past 2 years have not quite panned out. You know, I do have to admit, yeah. I think we were pushed a bit too far. You know, there were all these talks about even silly things like these face masks and like these little worms in the face mask and all these crazy things. And then you kind of take a step back. Well, I think a lot of stuff was exaggerated as well from the independent media perspective. And so we got to chill out a bit. You had retweeted an interesting meme. I guess this was from Free Thought Project, who I also enjoy very much, about a firing squad, a big tech shooting free speech, and White House standing by. And this is basically fascism, right? You know, the government telling private companies to, what to do. And I'm sure you guys have dealt with censorship. I was taken off of Patreon a year ago following an Associated Press hit piece on Francis Boyle, co-written by NATO, the Atlantic Council, because I had been the first to interview Boyle, and so I was mentioned in that piece. And a month ago, again, I was taken off of PayPal with Mint Press and Consortium. The same week, Disinformation Governance Board was created by the Department of Homeland Security. And so things in Orwell land, I feel, are going absolutely crazy, especially in America. And then we've got the whole Assange case, which I think they're trying to make as a precedent, to set as a precedent, which if he's extradited and tried, we're all screwed, because then they can do the same thing to anyone, anywhere. But what are your thoughts on this, you know, crazy Orwellian atmosphere and this descent into tyranny, it seems, in the United States?
Well, let me be the first to say that I really do miss Nina Jankowicz. I wish she'd come back, because Karine Jean-Pierre really needs some help with all the screw-ups that are on her plate. It was nice when we can spread it out and have a little bit of a, you know, like a poo-poo platter of sorts, a little smorgasbord of fascism, you know, in the form of fighting for social justice warriorness or whatever you want to call it and stuff. But yeah, it's crazy. And you know, I mean, we're all facing the same thing, right? Like, it's one form or the other, when it's different, whatever platform it is, if it's this platform or that platform, we're now going on 19 months from YouTube and of being demonetized. And that's the biggest one, because that was the biggest moneymaker. That's where the majority of the podcasters who, when they started this game, where their money came from, especially live streamers like myself, where, you know, they had a big, big platform. So it was easy to grow followers, and we'd have super chats that would really help us out and allow us to continue to do the work we want to do, which is this work, rather than having to go get another job, you know. But that's what they want. They want you to struggle. They want you to go, you know, not pay attention to what we're doing, because at the end of the day, we're all independent journalists, right? Nobody's gave us permission. We gave ourselves permission. So, you know, the fascism is tough right now via censorship. It's going to continue to be this way. I think it's going to get a little bit more worse before it gets better. But, you know, my hope, my hope is that something gives, that they just overplay their card, and we get, you know, bodies in the streets that say enough is enough. And we get to go back to, you know, or I don't want to say go back to, but at least head back towards the direction of what this country was built upon. And that's freedom of speech, you know, and it's so important. It's beyond important. And you're right. You know, until we all stand up and say, I am Spartacus, as you know, in correlation to Julian Assange, unless we all say, no, you know, I am not going to stand for this. I'm going to stand up for freedom of speech and for freedom of the press. Till we all do that, nothing changes. So we have work to do, and I hope that work does get done. And I would hope that things, you know, change. I mean, if we weren't dealing with the demonetization from YouTube, I would be sleeping a little bit better at night, because I wouldn't have to be so concerned about my bills and keeping the business running on a cryptocurrency based platform on Rockfin, which has been a godsend. But it's crazy that they're allowed to do that and get away with it. You know what I'm saying? And I don't want to hear it's the private company situation. It's not. They're taking, you know, their orders from the government. And it clearly states in Section 220 of the NDAA that if you want to act as a platform, you are then shielded from any litigation. You cannot be sued whatsoever. You know what I'm saying? You're protected. But if you do pick winners and losers, then you're a publisher, and then you can be sued and whatnot. So they're all hiding behind that law. And they're not being accountable to it. And the government is not getting, you know, doing what they should be doing, is, you know, following the antitrust and holding these companies, making them transparent, just like the elections we witnessed in the Global South, you know, and that's why they were able to change power, because they have fair, transparent elections. YouTube should be made transparent, and all these other companies should be made transparent. So if they take someone down, they set a precedent, and they have to be equal across the board.
Yeah, if people ask me today, I would say, don't become a YouTuber or podcaster. And I never even wanted to become a YouTuber or podcaster or even radio show host. This was all thrust upon me. All I wanted to do was find the truth and talk to smart people, you know. And it started out of the classroom. I was Skyping in Dr. Paul Craig Roberts, Ray McGovern, James Banford, John Perkins into my classes here in Mexico. And then I just started a podcast, and I got offered this radio gig. And huge thanks to Mike Ryan and TNT you know, financially speaking, because it's been an uphill battle against the empire trying to make a living from the podcast. As I mentioned, you keep getting the platform shadow banned. You know, my interview with Francis Boyle got 300,000 views. I bet it would have had 1 million views for sure. And they took it off. So, but imagine if they had let it run and I got 1 million views, you know, how many subscribers you would get and how much you would grow. And they just nip you in the bud. It's such an uphill struggle, but that's what you and I do. That's what we do. We fight against this insanity, and we're going to go to our second tequila break. Craig's website is theconvocouch.com, and you can find him on Twitter at YoPasta. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The 28th of June Republican primary for governor of Colorado will see an interesting contest between American entrepreneur Heidi Ganahl and ex-mayor Greg Lopez. Ganahl is the favorite, has big name endorsements, and she has raised more than $1 million, about 8 times more money than Lopez. But Democrat-aligned outside groups have started pouring in hundreds of thousands of dollars to boost Lopez's image in the hope that he will be an easier opponent in November for the incumbent Democrat governor Jared Polis. Legacy Media describes Lopez as the right-wing underdog in the race. He says Donald Trump won the 2020 presidential election and has compared vaccine mandates to racial segregation. If Lopez has a shock victory in the upcoming 28th of June primary, Governor Polis will face a tougher challenge in November than he may anticipate. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Think tsunamis only happen somewhere else? Think again. Tsunamis happen when ocean water is displaced by an earthquake or other large undersea disturbance. Plan to act. If you are near the coast and feel a quake, hear the ocean roar, or see the water recede significantly, a tsunami may be approaching. Get moving. Go inland and up to safety. For more information, visit tsunami.gov.
During the pandemic, 129 billion unrecyclable masks were used and thrown away every month. Over 3 billion masks now pollute the oceans. Let's not turn a blind eye to this disgusting plastic pollution. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
It is the Roy Moritz Show, sending transmission from Mexico, FEMA Region 12, here in the North American Union. We've been talking to Craig Pasta Jardula of the ConvoCouch.com, and don't let me forget his new initiative, the AM Wake Up, which you can also find on Rockfin. Rockfin is great as well, rockfin.com. I'm also a content creator there with Geopolitics and Empire. And don't forget, you can find Craig on Twitter at YoPasta, theconvocouch.com. To get your thoughts, perhaps, on the state of things in America, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on. The economy seems to be tanking. Things are really bad. Like in my lifetime, I don't think in our lifetime we've ever seen anything like what we are now witnessing, not just in America, but globally. So there's the economic situation. We were alluding to the totalitarianism that's seeping in. You know, this is one of the reasons I left. I permanently decided to expatriate from the U.S. in 2006, because I realized it was an empire on decline, and it would degenerate culturally, economically decline, and become authoritarian. And I think this is all happening now. So I felt like a Jew leaving Germany in the 1930s. And so, and there's even talk of a second civil war. So, you know, what other things are you looking at in America?
Well, the talk of the second civil war is something that's no joke. I mean, I think it's going to lie on political ideologies. They do have people really split and at each other's throats. And that's their main shtick, right? Keep everybody divided, keep them fighting each other. And then we can run off with all the money and resources. And that's what's happening, you know, and that's why so many of us are, you know, are deplatformed, are censored and stuff, you know, because the ruling class never wants you to figure this out, doesn't want to listen to you know, what's going on. I mean, great example is that Francis Boyle interview you have, you know what I'm saying? I'm sure they don't want people speaking out and hearing that information, that news. But that's part of their game. You know, they want to make sure that we stay silent. And they've injected this cancel culture into our society that is really, really taken to fruition, especially when it comes to the left in America, the American left, as I like to call them, because they're not really left. They're just a bunch of, you know, identity politics, social issues. They don't even think about economics, foreign policy, whatnot. I mean, they've taken to this cancel culture swiftly, I should say. And I am looking out for that next kind of, you know, neighbor at each other's throats, because that's what their ultimate goal is. That is how they maintain power. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting as we continue to see stuff that's going on in the United States, but we're going to monitor it as best we can. But that's why, you know, when it comes to my show and whatnot, is that I always try to talk to people who think differently than me. You know, I think when we can do that, there's a show I go on, Union of the Unwanted. And, you know, yesterday I went on, it was like the third time I've been on. My friend and Steve's been on way more than me, but we have these conversations that are normally not, they don't take place, you know, in the everyday norm, because we tend to stick in our own, stay in our own team, on our own side, in our own echo chamber. So as long as we can continue to do what we do and have these conversations, then we got a shot. And it's really just shaking people, you know, mentally, and letting them know and understand and letting them see for themselves that the people upstairs pulling the strings, they are our enemy, not the guy who lives across the street that thinks differently than me.
Yeah, what you said is really cool. You know, I was actually invited on the Union of the Unwanted. I don't know if it was the one that you were on or the week before, but it took place during this live TNT show, so I couldn't make it. But I had Charlie Robinson on. Was it last week? And I'm talking to Ricky Varandas. He'll be on TNT tomorrow again for the second time. And yeah, I think there's a segment of people coming together. Like, we all had different viewpoints, but I think we need to be able to talk to each other and always respect the person. No one's ever going to agree 100%. And that's been my shtick with geopolitics and empire since its inception. If you go to the Apple reviews, it's like I'm called communist, leftist, Marxist, far right wing, libertarian, conspiracy theorist, anti-Semite without any grounds for that, Russian propaganda. It's like you called everything crazy Christian conspiracy theorist. And it's like, well, they're all mutually exclusive. Which one is it? That doesn't make any sense. But that's what happens when you talk to everyone. And I also wanted to ask you about the left that doesn't get it. So I've been spending a lot of time the past few years talking to the left that does get it. You know, CJ Hopkins, Piers Robinson. I can't even remember all of their names, but I saw you retweeted. I thought it was funny. Slow News Day, Jimmy Dore interviewing Danny Haifong, who I've interviewed on Geopolitics and Empire, talking about Ben Norton, who was, you know, he was great with Gray Zone, and then Max Blumenthal started coming out and talking about COVID-1984 and getting it. But then there are people that on the left that still, you know, go for the vaccines and the whole lockdown and everything. You know, what's your take on that? What's up with those people who are still stuck in that kind of like leftism?
I don't get it. It's like if you just look and you see who owns all the people in the military industrial complex, Raytheon, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, it's all owned by two different companies, Vanguard and BlackRock. Well, guess who owns all the companies that are benefiting and making billions, if not trillions, off these vaccines? The same people, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson, Pfizer, Moderna, all owned by, you know, Blackstone and Vanguard. So I don't understand how they think that these people can be benevolent of sorts when it comes to public health. It's all about control at the end of the day. That's what the military industrial complex is doing. You know, they want to drop bombs and spend that money and whatnot and make sure that their toys work. But at the end of the day, they want to bring their enemy to their knees and they want to control them. Same thing when it comes to COVID-19. So when I still see people outside wearing masks and, you know, putting masks on kids. And just recently, you know, you talked to James Roguski, man, the hearing the other day, once again, the mother's calling in when your child has like 0.00001 chance of dying of COVID. Like, it's just beyond the pale. It's so rare. Why the hell would you want to shoot him up? I don't know. But that's the thing about the ruling class. They understand who they have to game. You know, they have to, who they have to hypnotize or who they have to fool, and they know how to do it. And they know how to separate people, you know? And by the way, you were supporting the Red Brown Alliance too, I heard, buddy. So just don't try to hide it, okay?
Yeah. You know,
have you heard that one before?
No.
The Red Brown Alliance? Yeah, no. That's like the commies supporting the fascists kind of thing. It's what I got accused of, because I got kind of got accused very similar to your situation. Right? Uh-huh. So mm-hmm. I talked about at a Black Lives Matter rally, there was Proud Boys that show up and they were arguing, and the Daily Beast put me in the dirtbag leftist all-stars and accused me of, you know, trying to form the Red Brown Alliance and telling a Proud Boy and telling a Black Lives Matter member in the streets that they shouldn't fight each other, that they have more in common with each other than they do the people upstairs pulling the strings. And they looked upon it as like a bad thing.
No, I don't trust any of this stuff now. Like, I believe January 6th was a false flag operation run by the government. We've got this Proud Boys group. We had this Enrique guy who was an FBI informant. And I feel like for people like you and me, like doing the stuff that we're doing, where we're independent, you know, I'm not taking money from, you know, only from listeners or whatnot. And I got an email yesterday, for example, from some listener, subscriber to my newsletter, for my free email list for Geopolitics and Empire. Just, he's speaking like a Fed. He's saying that I sound like a Proud Boy and like a Nazi, where I've spent the last 2 years talking about how my grandfather was a Nazi prisoner in Croatia, you know, for 6 months in the hole in the ground. He survived. He lived on to old age, but he was a Nazi prisoner. I've been speaking against Nazism. I've had Jewish historian on, Edwin Black, talking about, you know, some of these things. And it's like, they're trying to paint, and these are like Fed operations. And in my Telegram, I've had to fend off these crazy pro-Hitler, pro-Nazi, anti-Semite, crazy people coming in, probably like Fed bots. And they try to paint you like this so then they can take you down. And it's crazy. Like, as you say, it's just nothing to do with anything. And even the Oath Keepers, I question this whole Stuart Rhodes is kind of funny. His business, you know, is he involved with the Feds? It's just so much crazy stuff going on. And we've got just a couple minutes left. And I was going to ask you, well, I was also going to mention about Ben Norton, for example. I'm able to disassociate as well. It's not like I'm going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Of course, I don't agree with Ben's position on the whole COVID stuff, but I think he still does good stuff on foreign policy and multipolarista, and I'm able to retweet good stuff he does on multipolarista and just ignore the COVID, his opinion on COVID. So I think that's also a trait that we all need to, you know, be able to be like this. And you know, any thoughts on preparing for the craziness ahead? I always ask people. You know, there's people fleeing to Mexico, fleeing to rural areas, preparing bunkers, you know, running to the hills. Have you had any thoughts such?
Yeah. Well, when it comes to, you know, some people, like, you know, we can agree with them on certain things and disagree with on others. I've absolutely 1,000%. But I think a lot of other people, too, you know, when you talk about certain people that, you know, it's the way they treat people who disagree with them, you know what I'm saying, and the language they use and an ideology to kind of cast you off as a, you know, as an enemy of sorts just for thinking or feeling a certain way. You know, I mean, ideology sometimes, you know, ideologues, that is, then they're too much. They can't get out of their own headspace and see things for what they are. And, you know, and when it came to a lot of people that I got a little disappointed with, when the trucker rally is calling people fascist and Nazis and whatnot, when you don't even go out there yourself and you're actually helping the empire fight each other when you're supposed to be an anti-imperialist and fighting against the machine. But that's that and other things. But yeah, I mean, as far as like, you know, this craziness where everybody's kind of matriculating in certain areas, I think we need to return to simpleness, right? Today we had on Jim Gill of Food Forest Abundance talking about just growing your own food. I think his name was Tim Raines. I can't remember. Last week we had another guy who talked about how you treat your system and what you put in your system and how health-wise, how you should live and whatnot. So it's a return to simplism, right? Like, we have to get back to our roots. There's been too many toys out there, too many things, too many distractions that are not only even good just for our physical health, but they're not good for our mental health too as well. So we need to return as a species, people, to simplism, get out in nature, eat simple foods, clean foods, meditate, think, whatnot, be somewhat spiritual, and continue to talk to people who think differently than us before we leave anywhere, because there's really nowhere to go, right? This is where we live. Mm-hmm. I'd rather stay here and fight for what I believe in rather than kind of scram and try to pick up someplace else.
Real quick, we got like 30 seconds left. Where are the best websites, places to find you and your work?
Well, of course, you can go hit me at YoPasta at Twitter, of course, and that will give you the link to AM Wake Up on Rockfin, and the Combo Couch is on Rockfin and YouTube, but we kind of get spanked on YouTube, so come on over to our Rockfin, help us out. That's @YoPasta on Twitter, the Combo Couch at Rockfin, and AM Wake Up on Rockfin.
It's been awesome. Craig, hope to do this again. Keep up the great work. That's it for me today. And keep on listening here on TNT Radio.